And now it's time for wait a minute. What the hell is the show called again?
It's Chatter on Books. What else do you want me to say? Can I go now?
That's right. It's Chatter on Books. Let's do this thing.
We are back for the 47th episode of Chatter on Books, and we are so happy to be coming from Cap One Arena. You can only see this on News Channel 8, but I am tweeting out photos of our wonderful welcome here at Cap One Arena for Chatter on Books. And Luke, I got to go right to you. Luke Willardson of Monumental, thank you so much for having us here for that great welcome. We're going to abandon the entire show we had set up and just talk about Luke and what he's given us thus far, which is some great stuff. David Aldridge is here. Michael Kornheiser is here. Claude is here doing all the important work. Jean McManus is not with us because I got a cryptic report. She was in training for the last 4 days and was wrapping some of that up, and that has to do with painting. I don't know how that gets so rigorous, but we'll have her back next week. Okay. We got some...
Learning her primary colors.
Exactly. I think she's moved beyond primary colors. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're in Devil's Backbone Brewing Company at Cap One Arena, where I spent far too much time on myself and consuming that product of choice. We've got some random updates. We got some news David's going to share with us. We're going to talk to Luke about what Monumental has been doing about books and literacy. Some amazing stuff with the Mystics. That might be the part about which I'm most curious. Our featured author, Ben Raby, who is here tonight with his lovely bride, unbelievably just had a baby 5 weeks ago, Alyssa, and he is going to talk about this great book, which I had to try to find a quasi-clean copy from my house because there are several well-thumbed copies at home. 100 Things Capitals Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. My kids are up to about 150, Ben, so there has to be a sequel to this. And then we'll do Deserted Island, which will be all hockey. But David, news. Yes. Sitting
news
here
just
on your phone, hot
live,
off
local
the...
local late breaking, as we like
we
to say.
We don't call it hot off the presses anymore, whatever
no,
we call
it. No, it's very old.
What's the news?
The Nets are bringing Strasburg back. Yeah.
No surprise, right?
Well, it's always a surprise until they sign. You know, until they say yes.
The orchid blooms eternal.
It could go another way.
The orchid blooms eternal. You know, it's true about orchids. When they stop blooming, you can put them down in your basement for a while.
Yeah.
And you just give them a tiny little bit of water, and then they will bloom again. So, Michael?
Right.
That's what he's been doing for the 7 weeks since the since Game 7.
Yeah. Michael seldom gets effusive about things. When this news came in just
happy.
A few minutes ago, very happy.
I am so... Well, to be fair, over the last 2 weeks, no one has done anything with signings except for the Phillies and Braves. So it's nice to see the Nats getting this done with the homegrown star. I know he's from San Diego, but the guy we drafted, and we really got to see him bloom into something special this year.
Yeah. You would certainly, to your point, I had certainly expected that he would re-sign, but you never know because the Learners are notorious for deferring money and things like that, so
yeah,
you don't know.
And
somebody says, I don't want that.
The organization sending out those cryptic, we can't afford Strasburg and Rendon, which is nonsense,
both,
but they're
right.
Saying we can't do both. But was he even talking to other teams?
He met with the Yankees. He met with the Angels.
Does that mean they go into a room and say, look, we got to do this for appearances'
like
sake,
that.
But there's nothing
yeah,
serious about this?
Yeah, they meet with the owner, and they make their presentation, their pitch. It can be very elaborate, or it can be very simple,
yeah.
Depending on the team and the franchise.
How simple were the dollars?
Well, the reported numbers is $245 million for 7 years.
Man, I think we could all live on that.
I can work with that. No,
I think we can do okay.
It's not an unfair deal for someone who was the World Series MVP and who, frankly, has been, to me, one of the top 10 pitchers in baseball the last 4 or 5
yeah.
years.
Michael,
now,
you agree?
Now can we work him in at third base a little?
On his off days, he can play third.
Let's see. Okay, so remember Sopranos Con? Remember we had Richard Armstrong on a few weeks ago? Who has that fabulous book, The Don Con. And if David hadn't been busy, he would have gone to this thing called Sopranos Con,
I wanted to go Sopranos.
In which fans of The Sopranos went to Secaucus, New Jersey, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Evidently, tens and tens and tens of thousands of them
I will go next year.
Showed up.
It's happening. I'm
yeah.
going. Because, as I've told you, I have not watched any episodic series television since the last episode of The Sopranos.
Next year. My other favorite random, Charlie Brown Christmas show movie premiered on this day in 1965.
Wow.
Goes right by Michael, goes right by Luke. They're like, yeah never.
Like,
anybody watch the Charlie Brown Christmas special? It's the best movie out there.
Love that. How
still
do you not watch Charlie? It's not
yeah,
Christmas
yeah,
until
still
you
trying
see
to
that.
Kick the football.
Okay.
Can we just get to what
exactly.
you walked into and saw above the ice?
Yes, and I already tweeted it out. So thanks to Luke, who we're going to go to here in a little bit. On the screen, what do we call the screen now? And it's thanks to, I'm sure, people who work here with Luke.
The center hung.
The center con?
The center hung.
Okay, the center hung. Larger than, way larger than life, Chatter on Books. Yes, it's the nicest welcome we've already gotten.
Better than that, the artwork for the game is already up, so it makes it feel really official.
Yeah, right. It is really official, and I'll be here in another 2 hours watching that game. So thank you, Luke. So let's go to Luke. Luke, I know who you are and where you've come from and what your job is, but tell us the official title here. We've now call you God because of the hockey sticks in front of us and the pucks and everything else. But what's your title here, and do you consider yourself the luckiest person in the world to have this job?
Yes, I'm very lucky. I've been here for almost 5 years. I actually started off as an intern in January 2015.
We love internships.
Yes, and a lot of people actually here at Monumental started off as interns. I think that's a lot of people get breaks into sports that way. But I was lucky that someone quit while I was doing my internship, and I just applied for the job. So I'm the manager email marketing. So I do all the emails for the Capitals, Mystics, Go-Go, any concerts or events that happen here.
But not Captain, the most wonderful dog in the world.
No, I do not. Yes, unfortunately, I do not follow or do his social media.
But as soon as Captain has a book out, we'd like him. We'd like to be his first get.
Yes,
you know?
I'm sure I can help make that happen.
Thank you. Okay, so you and I have been trading emails, and this all started because Michael knew you, which is how we got this going, which is fabulous. And we started trading emails, and I think my first conversation with you was about Elena Delladonna, who is an amazing, amazing basketball player. David, I'm guessing you've met her.
Yeah.
Amazing, impressive person.
She is one of the most... I can't even describe how
admirable? Admirable?
Admirable is the exact right word. Yeah, just in all ways. Just the way she carries herself, the way she plays, the energy. And I actually, the funny thing, it's funny, is when they got to the WNBA finals, the Mystics PR people were filming everything, of course, and they did this great thing when she's standing at center court with her teammates in Vegas as they're celebrating, and she goes, "This is great, enjoy it, but we gotta win a bleeping championship." I love that. This is so awesome because she wanted it so bad.
The honesty of it.
Yeah, it was great.
So she's an author. Hopefully we have her on the show someday. A couple of other Mystics, and you've got one of your favorite stories, Luke, about right after the championship?
Yeah, I wasn't there personally, but I thought it was such a great thing for Natasha Cloud, one of our players for the Mystics. Basically, a week right after the championship, she went to Henley Elementary School, donated 300 books, and read to the students there as well. And I don't know why, but like you just saw them do, you know, going to Good Morning America. You saw them, you know, going to the Nats game, just the tour right after a championship. And then she just goes straight to, you know, the elementary school there and just donated the books to read to them. And I thought that was just so great.
The first time I win a national championship, I'll be swimming in one of those fountains in Georgetown. Oh, yeah. I won't have time to be
doing headstands.
You know, doing headstands. I can do a cup stand. That might have happened in our home not too long ago.
I feel like even on off championship years, they've always done a good job of getting players to local schools to do readings. I remember when I was a kid, Juwan Howard, I think, came to our school to read Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Nice.
Very cool.
Yeah, I know the Wizards do a lot of that. Even Bradley Beal is really big on doing that. I mean, he got the Community Assist Award, but like he really likes doing things like that, just going out and whether it's donating backpacks or bringing kids.
You sent a great video of Bradley Beal, and I apologize. Who was with him? That's so unfair.
Oh, it was, let me see. Sorry.
We'll get there.
Oh, Sheldon Mack.
Sheldon Mack go to a school and are reading to them. Mm-hmm. And the school, the book was something about a king and a queen, and so they brought crowns and tiaras for the kids, and then they're wearing crowns, and they look totally ridiculous, but they were totally into it, which is great.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Really great. Okay, there's a CAPS in schools reading program. Kids get points for reading.
Yes, and I actually help out with, so it's been, this is the third season they've been doing it. I've been helping them out with the emails for that one, and we basically just send out to teachers, like, hey, if your class does the most reading, we'll give some kind of prize, generally a puck. So, I mean, there's a little bit of an incentive, but it's more just to get, you know, kids to read. And the teachers will log their minutes at the end of the month and send it to us.
And schools love it.
Schools love it. And I think just the Capitals themselves, I mean, obviously when we won the Stanley Cup, it's such a good brand already. But, like, we just really like reaching out to the kids.
Michael, you taught incentives for kids to read. Good idea? Do you think the kids tell the truth? Are the teachers telling the truth? See, I definitely I lied to the nuns when I was in third grade. So
you probably have to break this down more by age group and school type to just see if it's something that you can make part of the curriculum. But I'm all for that. I remember we had all sorts of those incentivized programs in elementary school. And those are the habits that you want to try and set early because they'll continue with them going forward.
Yeah. Okay. But my favorite part, because I really didn't know this. I knew about some of the programs. You have a book club at Monumental?
Yes, we have a book club.
Fabulous.
And some people in the audience are also a part of that book club as well. Yeah, it's fun. Like, we've read a lot of different books, whether it's kind of The Power of Habit, Why We Do What We Do in Life, which is more of like a self-help, kind of something that, you know, a human resources type book. And then we also read one that was The Push, A Climber's Search for the Path, which was about rock climbing. But it was very, obviously it was like, okay, we're reading about rock climbing, but just having someone that was in the book club that actually does rock climbing and then relating it to life. And I mean, it's fun that we can able to have a little bit of fun with our book club. And just, I mean, we've read Becoming by Michelle Obama.
Do you guys like Becoming?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a wonderful book. If you're going to read a political memoir, that's the one, Michelle Obama's book, that's the one to read. Mm-hmm. Okay, I was going, you also, the Subtle Art of Not Giving a Bleep, that's pretty, you know, good for you guys.
Another one of those really fun suggestions from someone in our group. But there's always something that we can take out of all of our books.
Okay, but Luke, to save your wonderful job here, there's something missing from this list. It's in front of you.
Yes, The Business of Happiness. I feel like Ted's book,
this was not required reading,
I think.
Prerequisite, read that book.
Yes.
There you go.
I've not read the updated version, but I'm sure I read the original version, which was good. Oh, isn't that nice? Yeah. I worked for a company once with about 80, at the time had about 85,000 employees, SAP. And shockingly, I think every employee and every employee's spouse and every employee's dog got a copy of the CEO's book when it came out. And shockingly, it was doing very well on that bestseller list. But have you read it, Luke? I don't want to get you in trouble. Just say yes. And
yes,
you loved it?
I've skimmed through it, and I really want to do a deeper dive with the next couple of months.
That's nice.
You let it out from your nightstand.
Yeah.
I know. Well, I keep it on my desk.
It looks very clean. You know, it looks very clean. What's the most important lesson from the book, from Ted's book, from those of you who have read it? Shout it out. We'll repeat it. Or not.
How to be happy in business.
Well, for me, the essence of it was you have to really enjoy it, what you're doing, because work can be hard. And if you don't, it doesn't mean every day's perfect, but you better really enjoy what you're working on or it's not going to be done.
And then also, and on a serious note, Ted is very good at having all staff meetings and being there and providing a lot of really great insight. So I will say, like, he's very passionate about, you know, just Monumental sports in general. So it's,
you guys just had an all staff meeting a couple days ago.
Yes.
What was the big takeaway? What did he want the big takeaway to be?
I think it's just more, you know, just getting to know the general manager, like our new general manager for the Wizards. And I think a lot of us don't really know that side because we either do sponsorship or sales or something, and we don't really see the operations side too much. And he's really been good at like trying to like, okay, let's bring the GM for the Mystics and for the Wizards and ask them questions. And so anyone could ask them any question they want. And it was really enlightening.
And does it make you optimistic about the future of the Wizards?
Yes. And
Did you bring up defense?
Someone did ask that question. And you know what? And they said, and he was very honest. He said, you know what? It's a young team and they need to learn, you know, to work better with each other, you know, to communicate and it will come, but you know, everyone is used to scoring a lot, you know, coming out of college or other places. Uh-huh. And so I think what he said, it was really fun just to kind of sit there, have some lunch.
Sure.
Yeah. So.
Okay. I'm on the record at least twice on the Tony Kornheiser show saying I am, because my vast knowledge, very optimistic about the second half of the Wizards season, right?
I would say if you're not thinking about wins and losses, and you shouldn't, but they're at least doing what every other team in the NBA has done when it has to rebuild.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You go young and cheap. You have to try and develop somebody on the fly that can get better in time. They're using their G League team correctly now, which is to put those young guys in there, let them play down there, and then hopefully one of them blossoms.
So yeah. It's okay. Yeah. I'm fine with how they're what they're doing.
Yeah, what he said. And maybe they'll get a few calls.
I'm really happy about Strasburg. I mean, very seriously, I think one of the things you all do, which is really important, especially when you have a young team or a team that may not be winning those national championships yet, is you're getting them out in the community via these reading programs. Right. You're mm-hmm. getting them out in the community. Because those little kids, you watch this video with Brad Beal and the other guy, I feel terrible. I keep forgetting his name.
Sheldon.
Thank you, Sheldon, my dear close personal friend. Those kids will be fans forever. They will be fans forever and growing that base. Yeah. Yep. All right. Happy. So Ted Leonsis' book, The Business of Happiness, and we'd be happy to have Ted on the show anytime, is our new favorite book, which is a good segue. And Luke, stay there. This is going to be a pop quiz for you because I didn't tell you about this.
Okay.
David,
yes.
Your idea of this segment. Sports books.
About sports books, yes. Yeah. Well, you first.
Are you tweeting right now about Strasburg?
I have to. This is my job. I have to do an instant reaction column, so I'm reacting while I'm listening and talking.
The
multitasking.
IRC.
Sorry. The idea was. Well, you said. First you said, well, what's your favorite hockey movie? And I'm like, there aren't any. What are you talking about?
There's two. We'll be spending 20 minutes on that.
I did a lot of prep for that question.
Exactly. Yeah. Slap, and Miracle. I get it. And the Mighty Ducks. There's three, actually.
Right. To win Coach O'Reilly.
Right. But no, I thought, well, why don't we do, since we're at Capital One Arena. I want to call it Verizon Center so bad. I'm sorry.
I want to call it the MCI
Capital
Center.
One Arena. Since we're at Capital One, and this is a sports venue, we should maybe do your favorite or the sports book of any kind that was memorable to you or that influenced you in some way or
made you. You're going to go first, then I'm Michael, then me, then Luke.
Yeah, I thought about it.
Going to your friends in the seats.
No, Luke. I actually read a lot. That's, you know, when you're young, when you're a kid, you read sports books, you know, because you like sports and that's a way to kind of develop your reading skills. So I was 7, 8 when I bought Gail Sayers' autobiography. It was called I Am Third.
That young?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's called I Am Third. And the reason it's called I Am Third is because his mantra in life was God is first, my friends are second, and I am third. My friends and family are second, and I am third. So, but it was about him, but nominally it was about him, but it was really about him and his relationship with Brian Piccolo, who was his teammate with the Chicago Bears and who died at age 26 of one of the most horrific forms of leukemia one can ever die of at such a young age. And just how they transcended their backgrounds, their races, to become really close friends and really good friends and loved each other. And it was the first time I had ever read a book about two grown men having a relationship where you could say you love the other guy. And it just stuck with me. It stuck with me my whole life, just the lessons learned from that book.
It's one of the great, their friendship is one of the great stories of sports.
Yeah, it really is.
That's lovely. Michael, do you need a little more time Googling?
No, actually, your story brought me back to, I couldn't remember it, so I looked this up, but in terms of sports books that I read as a kid, there is a series that I'm sure everyone checked out from their school's library, the Matt Christopher series, but the books about the kid who only hit home runs, Return of the Home Run Kid, Comeback of the Home Run Kid. I don't remember anything except going down that rabbit hole, and I mean, you could see the outcome from the onset,
like Chip Hilton books. I know.
But then I'm thinking, Tori, I was thinking about this question about a book that has meant more to me now, and it's actually it's a collection of excerpts from Alistair McKenzie, Dr. Alistair McKenzie, the famous architect from Cypress Point, Augusta National.
So golf courses for those of us who are hockey
and
fans.
And his sort of love affair with St. Andrews, the home of golf, the spirit of St. Andrews, how he tried to bring the spirit, the ethos of this golf course and the choices that it forces a golfer to make. And you see how he can apply that to all different types of land. And with the Presidents coming up, another McKenzie golf course, a course that's designed for match play. And there's just this great mindset as to how do you say play the shot you know you should versus the one that the land and the hole and the drama of, say, a match entices you to play. It's just a very honest, well-written book that is so true today as it was, say, 100 years ago, and really just how you try and bring these golf courses. You think about what happened in the 70s and 80s and 90s of these super manicured, house line courses mm-hmm. that were just these huge blights on communities and natural resources. And even 100 years ago, how you tried to bring the golf course back to its most natural sense.
I keep thinking the next spinoff of this show would be Chatter on Law. It could be Chatter on Golf. We could take the same approach to golf. It's lovely.
Yes.
Luke, do you have a sports book, favorite sports book?
Yeah, mine's definitely not very deep at Moneyball, mostly because that kind of helped me want to get into the business of sports, because I did my undergrad in finance, so I was working in the financial world in San Francisco. And I did a couple years of that, and I that's about the time that, you know, I saw the movie and then the book, and Billy Beane actually played, I think he played baseball either a year or two at my high school in San Diego. So I was like, okay, kind of a connection. And I think just the way that it was, it just got me really interested into it. And then I had a brother-in-law who does that. He got a master's in statistics, and he actually went to work at ESPN. He worked for the Detroit Pistons, Coach Van Gundy, like well back when he was still there. Mm-hmm. And so he started doing that, like that kind of like using data to, which I know, like on PTI listening to it, like there's always a back and forth about data, but I think that's what
they recognize its value.
Right.
They do.
But I think it's what brought me into sports and like interested in it.
I think it opened up sports to a lot of people who were always the last ones picked for the dodgeball game, right? But it opened up. Even just as a fan, it opens up a different context of the game, which I think a lot of people enjoy.
And I started doing it on my own. Like, it was funny because I was still working. I was an underwriter for a mortgage lender, and I was just on my free time. I was just doing it on my own. I was just creating these like spreadsheets of just like
a nerd.
Yeah, I was.
Wow.
And that's what really like it really kind of got me like, wow, this is fun. Like, and I can use what I love numbers and I could use that, but apply it to sports. And I was like, wow, that's cool. Anyway, so.
So was life directing in a way for you?
It was.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, mine weren't life directing at all, but they changed. I have two. One was David Marinus's book on the 1960 Olympics, Rome. Because it made me realize, like it or not, the 1960 Olympics, you had the backdrop of the Cold War, civil rights, politics, all sorts of things going on. And like it or not, those things had an influence on sports, and the sports had an influence on all of those issues. And I just thought, okay, that never really occurred to me before. It's a wonderful book. And the other one, which made me realize, Michael, maybe you read this because you appreciate good writing. It made me realize that good writing can take a topic that you're not even interested in and make it fascinating. John McPhee's book about Bill Bradley's senior year at Princeton. It's just absolutely remarkable. It's called A Sense of Where You Are. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't have cared less about Bill Bradley, about basketball, about Princeton. Two of my sisters went there. I hate them, so that's all like, really turned off by that. It was just remarkable writing, and I couldn't put it down. And that made me realize, and I will never even come close to achieving that, good writing can do a whole lot. Whole lot. Okay, Luke, we're going to thank you. We're actually going to adopt you after this show because of this great stuff. But we're going to take a break. We're going to switch seats out and come back with Ben Raby. Luke, thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks so much.
It's been very fun.
We're back. We're back with Al Strasberg all the time here at Chatter on Books. I love that we can actually deal with news as it happens. Okay, David, give us your instant... What do you call it? What you had to do? Your instant reaction story?
Yeah. Okay. Well, we set up a discussion room online where fans can...
So give us in 15 seconds or less your instant reaction to Strasburg's signing for $10 billion.
My instant reaction is that at least they're being consistent. I don't agree with the notion that they can't re-sign both Strasburg and Rendon, because they're billionaires and they can do it if they want to. That they choose not to is vexing to me, but it's, you know, it's their money.
Right.
And if at least they value something to the point where they'll pay market value for
it. Okay, good. Thank you. Now we're done with Strasburg. Michael, anything else?
No, I'm just smiling.
So happy. This is as effusive as you will ever see Michael Kornheiser. This is great.
Which really just reveals what you think of me, Tori.
No, you're calm. You're very calm, which is good. We need calm. Okay, we're back. It's Chatter on Books. We're at Cap One. We're in the Devil's Backbone Brewing Company, where, as I say, I spend way too much time in this place. And we're back with Ben Raby, who we've heard him, we've seen him, we've read his tweets, and we're very fortunate to have him here with us to talk about 100 things Capital fans should know and do before they die. Ben, it's really fabulous, and thank you for the updated version. But as I said, I have a question for you about the non-updated, the pre-Stanley Cup version. But a little bit about you. You're a Syracuse grad.
I am, yeah. Born and raised in Montreal and did my undergrad at Concordia University in Montreal, and then did a one-year grad program at Syracuse. It was actually 14 months straight, one calendar year and then some. And that program ended with a couple of months here in Washington, a placement, an internship. And I was at WTOP, and that was summer 2008. And I absolutely loved this market. Did everything I could over those 2 months to let folks know if anything comes up down the line, please call
me. I'm here.
And I was fortunate. 10 months later, I got a call.
So you're Canadian. Did you play hockey? Everybody plays hockey, right?
The stereotype, yeah. I played hockey growing up and watched a lot of hockey. Hockey Night in Canada, sort of the Monday night equivalent, Monday night football equivalent. So, yeah, fit that stereotype a little bit. Liked other sports, but hockey was always high on the list.
The national pastime. Who was your favorite Canadian hockey player? When you were very young?
Yeah, not necessarily household names, but it was hard not to like Patrick Waugh growing up in Montreal, helped the team win
David's
a couple
his head.
Of Stanley Cups.
Michael's
yeah.
pretending to nod
Patrick
his head.
Great goal. No.
Big hockey.
He would be the household name that maybe would resonate. Yeah. There were some mid-range players I also was drawn to as a kid.
Uh-huh. Years ago, I was in Edmonton for reasons not worth explaining, which is really far from anywhere.
What time of year?
Winter.
That's
very cold. Very cold. You lived in Syracuse. That's cold. But anyways, I'm in a cab, and somehow it came up that I was originally from Pittsburgh. Mario Lemieux, Sidney Crosby. And I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, Sidney Crosby lives about 10 blocks from where my dad lives. Cab driver slams on the brakes, turns around, couldn't believe it, asked me for 10 or 15 minutes about exactly where it was and how far from my father and did we ever see him. And I go, yeah, we saw him occasionally in the Starbucks in town. And I had to sign something for the cab driver. As a person whose father lived 10 blocks around. So it was crazy. Okay, so what's an average day like covering the Caps?
It's a long day, but that's a good thing. It's fun. Earlier today, for example, today is a game day. We're recording on a game day. Was out at the MedStar, Capitals Iceplex, just like David, getting used to calling it Capital One Arena, getting used to calling it the MedStar, Capitals Iceplex, where they practice. Handled some pregame interviews there and some content for some of our pregame programming, which includes an online podcast, if you will, a pre-show that airs late in the afternoon, and getting set for the broadcast itself, which begins in the 6 o'clock hour and various stations in D.C., 106.7, 1500 a.m., etc., and then handle the pregame hosting, intermission, and postgame show as well.
Backstrom's back tonight?
He is back. First time all year that the best team in the league has the optimal lineup. Everyone is healthy and accounted for now, so they're the best team, and maybe the rich about to get richer, if you could believe that.
I was talking to Luke about this the other day. As everybody knows, my family all in on the Caps, have been for years. There were some dark periods there before 2018 in which members of my family said they were going to take out Slapshot if the Caps didn't win. You know, they got a little chippy there at the end. What is it, do you think, because they're missing people like Backstrom, what has made them so good this year? It was a little off last year. We had the Stanley Cup hangover. But what's making them so good this year? Or what do they think?
A little bit of fatigue last year. They're a deep team. They've been a deep team for a number of years, but certainly that has a lot to do with it this year. At one point recently, just about 2 weeks ago, they were without four regulars just up front, four out of their 12 forwards, so essentially a third of them, if you prefer. And, they've been deep. And, certainly Alex Ovechkin seemingly still has that fountain of youth in him, and John Carlson enjoying a career year has had a lot to do with it as well. But they're a deep team, and you know what? Going back to that Stanley Cup run, there's, I don't know if swagger is the appropriate word, but there's a confidence there that they collected. Barry Trotz used to have an expression on that run, being comfortable in uncomfortable situations. And this team historically wasn't always comfortable in uncomfortable situations. And the start of this year, little adversity, the scale isn't as big as it was a couple of years ago, of course, but on a smaller scale, when it wasn't necessarily ideal to start the year with a suspension of Kuznetsov, for example, whatever it may have been, they've proven to be able to handle some adverse situations, maybe better than in years past.
Mm-hmm. David and Michael, David born and raised D.C., right?
Yes.
Michael born and raised in D.C. I've been here long enough to say I was born and raised here in D.C. Are you all in on the Caps now? Because David, you were raised with the Redskins
Wizards.
Somewhat.
No, they've been the best team consistently in town over the last 20 years, sure. And I've said this many times. One of the reasons I took the job at The Athletic and left network television was because of the run 2 years ago. Well, it was 2 years ago. Yeah. Watching that from hotel rooms across the United States and seeing Penn Quarter and going, wow, that really looks exciting. It looks like everybody, the city's really bought in, you know, that they're all in on it. So, yeah, I mean, they've been fantastic. And for them to retool and bring in, you know, some of the guys, Gudis, that they've brought in this year, and Panic and some of the other people, and they've all kind of just immediately kind of at least understand what their roles are, and they're getting better at it. And to Ben's point, they seem like they're a very deep team this year. They're run the right way. They do things the right way.
Yeah. Michael, enough room in your household? Because there's a lot of gnats in your household.
I would say yes, but with reservations, just because I know I'm not as big of a fan of the Caps as I have been of the Nats in my return to D.C. But if I go back to my childhood, my memories are going to the old Cap Center and going to hockey games and riding in the elevator of this building with players afterwards who were just giants on skates as I was a little kid, having my dad take me to the popcorn guy he had known for years and ran into after they made the trip from Maryland into the city. You know, I talked a lot about going to the World Series with my dad. I mean, the first time we had that experience was when I was in fifth grade, going to the Stanley Cup Finals, and I had some issues as I moved away for college, my first jobs, grad school, in the beginning of that Rock the Red era, where I actually felt like I was not really welcomed back into the fold by some of the newer fans moving into the area. But that's the natural course of these teams. I mean, I lived a couple blocks away from this arena, and it was such a privilege for us to take a date night and go to a game, which was, you know, in some of those very tough years that you and your kids were mentioning.
Yeah. Thank God it's no longer out of the Cap Center. Could that be terrible? The Beltway, we'd never go. Okay, Ben Raby. Just the jack of all trades when it comes to sports, and author of 100 Things Capitals Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. This had to have taken dozens and dozens and dozens of interviews. But how did you happen to get chosen to do this book? It's a bit of a franchise. And then what work went into creating these great stories? I knew a lot of them, but I didn't know all the stories about the Caps' past. And then the things that everyone should do, like see the Hershey Bears, particularly on throughout the Bear Night. But how did you get tapped for this, and what was it like constructing the book?
Yeah, it was a colleague of mine who's not in this market anymore, a fellow named Chuck Gormley, who covered the Capitals for a number of years. I think had maybe flirted with the idea of doing something together with the folks at Triumph Publishing, a publishing company based out of Chicago. As you said, it's a franchise. It's been done on other teams. And when Chuck and I were talking about it, he then was going to be moving to another market, and it sort of fell on me. All right, am I going to do this on my own, or what are we going to do now? And the Triumph folks, the publishing company, in typical fashion, gave me about 48 hours. They said, we need an answer. And I said, and speaking of my wife, I said, all right, we're going to do this. We're going to write a book and see how it goes. And it was...
Your wife, Alyssa, was here with us. Sorry to interrupt. Got you a lot of coffee.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like you didn't have much time to do this book.
It's... As you know, and from speaking to other authors as well, I'm sure, writing a book can be, and I found out, a lonely endeavor, long hours, long nights. Fortunately, it was before we had our two children. It was going back a couple of years ago here, but it was a lot of work. The fun part, kidding aside, the most enjoyable experience was arranging the interviews, talking to people, talking to former players, coaches,
former executives. Players especially seemed really eager to talk. They loved, even if they had unhappy things happen, they still loved their time with the Caps.
It was really refreshing to talk to the former players, because nothing against current athletes, but they're so programmed. They're in the moment. A lot of cliches, a lot of robotic speak. There are ways to get them to open up, but it was refreshing to talk to the retired players, the former players, who maybe hadn't been asked about certain situations, good or bad or otherwise, and it gave them a forum to share some thoughts, and it was enjoyable to touch base with them, and you could tell, because one of the fun parts too, and other writers and authors' experiences too, I'm sure, you talk to somebody and you finish and they say, you know who you should speak to, and then you get their contact info and the dominoes start to fall. So that was the most... perhaps enjoyable part, just talking to so many folks along the way. Transcribing was a different story.
Yeah. One of my favorite stories in there, again, one of the greatest moments if you're a Caps fan, is the goal. Ovechkin's. Tell us that one.
Alex Ovechkin during his rookie year, which was hardly an encouraging year for the team as a whole, a last place finish. They were very much a rebuilding team, but about midway through his rookie season, they had a Western road trip, Southern California, Arizona, and in this 5-1 blowout game in Glendale, Arizona, and nothing interconference game between two meh teams. He scores this unbelievable goal. It remains, arguably, 670 whatever goals later, the greatest of his career, falling on his back, one hand on his stick. And to hear it anecdotally from the players who were there sharing their thoughts in disbelief at the moment, and then they watch the replay on the Jumbotron, and there's a collective gasp in the arena. You happen to have Wayne Gretzky, of all people, on the other side of the bench. He was the coach of the Coyotes at the time. It was a few things coming together there, but it was one example in a rookie year for Alex Ovechkin that so many people look back on now, and they say there were so many signs in that rookie season of what was to come as far as the stardom, the potential, and that goal, that terrific goal, the goal, is one example.
What do you think keeps him going? It's hard to play that well with that level of intensity. David and Michael have heard me talk about this a lot. I'm amazed at Tom Brady's ability to keep playing at the level he plays. Physically, obviously, he's in pretty good shape, but doesn't get hit much. But to be able to play with that intensity at that level for so long is hard. What keeps Ovechkin going?
Yeah, it's amazing. Certainly the 2018, the drive to get that elusive Stanley Cup title, I think drove him quite a bit, particularly 16, 17, 18, to finally get over that hump. And it's amazing what winning the cup has done for him, rather than be satisfied with just
really
the
wicked
one.
Hangover for a while.
Well, we saw last year, you referenced earlier, the team, some members may have suffered from the quote-unquote hangover. I thought last year was one of Ovechkin's best seasons. Mm-hmm. And if anybody had an excuse last year to take the foot off the pedal for just one season and maybe take a step back, it would have been him. The people would have excused him for that, etc. It was just the opposite. He was terrific last year, and it's amazing. Winning the cup, it seems to have rejuvenated him almost, reinvigorated him to an extent, and it's been a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I'm so glad you did a chapter in the book on Ron Weber, because growing up in this city, Ron Weber taught everybody in D.C. hockey.
Remind those who
he was a play-by-play guy for the first 1,700 or so games.
I was a
kid listening on my blue Panasonic transistor radio. It was shaped like a globe.
Nice. Did it have an antenna?
Listening to Caps games, and I guarantee you I was the only black kid in Northeast Washington listening to Caps games. But he taught everybody the game, because nobody knew hockey in Washington when he came here. And it was just, I was so glad that you were able to talk to him about the early years, because we learned a lot. We learned everything.
And one of the neat things during the Stanley Cup run in our broadcast booth, this was John Walton extended this invite, 20 years after Ron Weber had called his final game as play-by-play voice of the Capitals, who, by the way, have only had three radio voices in 45 seasons total, Ron Weber, Steve Colby, John Walton. But in Game 4 of the 2018 Stanley Cup Final, John Walton and the Capitals Radio Network invited Ron into the booth, not just to sit and watch Game 4. He was part of the broadcast, which meant a lot to him. Capitals won in a 6-2 rout, so we got to have a little bit of fun with Ron as well in the booth, and that was, for me, during that 2018 Cup run, including Ron for Game 4, given his history with the team, was a special thing that we did.
You really like the outdoor classics.
I do. Are you asking or you're telling me?
Yeah, no, you really, it seemed like you really liked them.
Yeah, there's a thought, maybe they're becoming a little bit watered down, and there's a few a year. My thought is, if you've attended one, to go in person is really special.
It was great.
It's a spectacle.
The one here was terrific.
It's a spectacle,
really,
from the decor to the atmosphere to everything that goes on outside the
stadium. To the sheer number of people.
Yeah, the volume of people. And I think everyone's there just to have a good time.
Yeah.
Folks recognize it's something different.
Was it Ovechkin in the book, 100 Things Capitals Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die by Ben Raby? And was it Ovechkin who talked about how awesome it was to go out on the ice and see 70,000 people in the stands and said, this is must be what it's like to be in the NFL every Sunday?
I think it was him who said that. Exactly, just comparing it to football, saying you can't imagine doing this, all the build-up to do this once a week on that scale of the NFL. But it was it's a well-done production by the National Hockey League, the outdoor games. We've been fortunate to have one here in Washington in 2015, the one in Annapolis, if you want to include that as well, the stadium series. They're well done. I think there's a thought on TV, maybe they're becoming a little watered down, but when you go in person, It's a spectacle.
It's pretty cool.
Once or twice a year, I think, it'd be great.
Yeah.
Absolutely great. What stories did you leave out? There's so many great ones in here, but are there any you thought, we just don't have space?
I left out probably, I feel bad saying this now, the story of, in the 1980s, of Michael Pavanka, who was in Czechoslovakia during communist rule, and what the capitals had to do at that time in order to essentially recruit him. And he fled from his home country, from his family, left everything behind. And the story of how David Poile, then the GM of the Capitals and management, recruited him, and the tales that I've heard about it involving having to rip a $5 bill, and they told Pavanka, when somebody gives you the other half of the $5 bill, that's how you know to follow him.
That's
great. And the tale of that.
Wow.
That's a tough question. Now I feel like that has to be in the book.
That needs to be in the book. The next edition.
Book in and of itself.
that's quite the tale of how they recruited.
So it is wonderful. And then at the end, you talk about how great it's been and how remarkable a team it is. All of these things are true. But this, you finished this book before 2018 in the Stanley Cup Championship. And you were, it was hard to tell reading it. Were you wistful? Were you hopeful? What were your feelings going into 2018?
Going into that season, I don't think too many folks expected them that would be the year they would win the Cup. They had so many more talented teams earlier in the decade, and there was a thought that maybe at long last that Aaron quote window was finally closing. And the funny thing is, when the book came out in the fall 2017, I was at the practice facility, and the first person asked me to sign the book. I hadn't been asked to sign it. It had just come out. It caught me by surprise. I didn't know what to put in the book, an inscription. And for some reason, I just wrote, "May this be the year." And I signed it. And then after that, I kept that going the rest of the season at various bookstores, whatever. I said, "May this be the year." I didn't think anything of it. And then sure enough, a few months later, they're hoisting the Stanley Cup, and they win, and then a few days after they won, we get the call from Triumph Publishing, "Get me rewrites." So we made a revised version, a few additions, a few additional chapters, and it was that was an enjoyable the rewrite was enjoyable.
Yeah. Probably a couple of months before the end of the season, my entire family of five, clearly drinking too many beers here at Devil's Backbone, all said, because we knew it wasn't the year, it wasn't going to happen. We all said, like, pinky pledge, okay, if the Caps win the Stanley Cup Championship this year, we'll all get tattoos. I mean, in the back of our minds, we're all going, never going to happen, never going to happen. So they win, we all go nuts, none of us get tattoos, and we're all calling each other chickens and this and that, whatever. And our phantom daughter, Devin, calls us up a couple months after the championship. And anytime your 20-something child calls from college on a Saturday night, it's not good.
Not good.
There's nothing good about a late-night call, you know, police station in Syracuse, New York. Yes, you can expect that. She calls and like, "What's up?" And she goes, "Guess what I did?" And I said, "I don't know." She got Caps tattooed inside her lower lip. All Caps, her lower lip. And trying hard not to overreact, "Well, that's interesting. Why did you pick your inside your lower lip?" And she said, "Because they say it doesn't hurt as much." Now, clearly she was so inebriated when she had this done, she wouldn't have felt anything. And then she also said, and they also say it disappears really quickly. And I say, okay, the only thing I know about tattoos is tattooing the inside of racehorses' lips because it lasts a lifetime. So it's almost 2 years ago now, right? That tattoo is still there, but all in. Yeah. So what's next, Ben Raby? What's next? Is there another book in your future, or was this too lonely an experience?
Let's work on raising our children right
now.
Yeah,
exactly.
We'll revisit down
the
line.
See you in 20 years.
Yeah. But you know what? If I was going to write one book, I'm glad that it turned out as it did. It was a very, very enjoyable experience.
It is a wonderful book, and it really is the 100 things Capitals fans should know and do. It brought a lot of joy to a lot of people. And there are 4 or 5 copies around our house, and they get given to somebody, and then the neighbor brings it back. So thank you for doing it, and thanks for being here with us. Stay with us, because we'll make Ben part of this last segment, okay? All right, David didn't like this idea, because there are so few, but I said to close out the show, talk about books about hockey that we loved, and knowing there are so few books, other than Ben's, truly about hockey, than movies, and there are only 2. So David.
Well, there's three.
Grumpy David. Yeah, three.
Ducks.
Well, and then there's one.
My generation.
Yeah.
That's true. Okay, Michael, you go first, your generation.
I was going to go Mighty Ducks 1, 2, and 3. So there's so many strong memories that I
Did
have.
Did you go to them? Did you go to see those movies?
In the theater?
Yeah.
Or, yes.
Wow.
Even number three, the prep school years. Stay away from the varsity until the varsity, junior varsity game. No, I mean, we have such strong memories of movie number one. You're not even a has-been. You're a never was. Wear thick socks. In number two, as they're doing the skate scene throughout the downtown city scene, every one of us went home, put on our rollerblades, and was trying to jump off our front stoops.
That's
until we
so
realized
great.
We couldn't do that.
I completely missed all these movies. I mean, much older than you. David?
I feel like such a piker. I never have actually seen Slapshot. I've seen pieces.
You would enjoy it now
I'm
more
sure
than...
I would. I'm yeah. sure. Everybody says it's a great movie.
Iconic.
I know about the Hanson brothers. I know the yeah. conceit and the plot. I just never actually seen it.
Paul Newman wearing some of the most awesome outfits in it.
But I did see Miracle, and it was very good. So I would go with Miracle. It was a very sanitized version of what Herb Brooks was actually yeah. like.
The great viewing of Miracle now, if you've seen it 15,000 times like I have, is you watch it, and you pull up on your phone the video of the little boy who does the Herb Brooks speech,
yeah.
and he wears the funny little suit, and you watch them at the same time, and it's spectacular.
Yeah, well,
that will enhance your viewing experience. Yeah. Yes, it did. Ben, favorite movie?
Let's go. We got to go Slapshot.
Yeah.
Slapshot's an institution.
Yeah,
it's the
yeah.
major league of, or Bull Durham,
right.
of yeah. hockey movies.
Right.
It is. And it evidently has real lasting power. Has real lasting power. Okay, Ben Raby, thank you for being with us. Luke Willardson, thank you so much for the hospitality,
yes.
for all the stuff. I'm going to need security to take me to my car.
Knuckle puck time.
Yeah. little housekeeping. First of all, Calvert Woodley could not send us wine and cheese to bring with us this evening, but go to Calvert Woodley, use Nationals 5 at checkout. You get $5 off. Claude, thank you as ever, making everything happen here. David, Michael, Jeannie, we hope training rehab is going well. We get to see you again soon. And come back next week. It's our last show of the season, and we have Erica Wright, who is the author of Famous in Cedarville. And I'm just going to go get a beer until the game starts in 2 hours. Go Caps!